from KQED.
Support for the California Report comes from Digital Foundry, building digital capabilities for leading organizations around the world. More online at digitalfoundry.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. And the California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org.
On today's California Report magazine, what it's like to be a nursing mom with a new baby who's also a political reporter covering the Democratic National Convention.
People like babies, and I think it's kind of humanized me to a lot of the politicians that I normally talk to in pretty high-pressure situations.
And we head to Amman, Jordan, with a group of Bay Area Muslims who work in mental health. They're helping refugees from Syria cope with PTSD and bringing some of those lessons back to California. Plus, we meet a band that's headlining summer music festivals around the state. It formed more than 60 years ago as a way for Japanese Americans to heal after internment.
The quality of music, it just made you feel so happy that life was beginning to get back to normalcy. These were the good times now.
I'm Sasha Coca, and this is the California Report magazine. Here's a sound you probably didn't hear this week as you listened to the Democratic National Convention.
Can I have kisses? I'm gonna miss you tonight.
That's Marisa Lagos from KQED's politics and government team and her five-month-old baby, Diego, who she brought along with her so she could report from the DNC with a little help from her own mom.
Be good for Nana, okay?
All right.
Okay. I love you guys. See you as soon as I can.
All right.
Marisa's had to balance her roles as a reporter and mother at a convention where a lot of the talk has been about gender, working women, childcare, and the glass ceiling. Hi, Marisa.
Hey, Sasha.
What's it been like for you this week, juggling being a nursing mom, having a new baby, and also covering this historic convention?
You know, it's been tough, but fun and rewarding. I think there's definitely been some trade-offs. I probably would have spent a little more time out late after the convention talking to people that I know, but I've had to come home. And it's been really neat. I mean, this is something that my mom and Diego will have the rest of their lives as part of their history, too.
How have people reacted when you've come up to interview them and you've got your baby in your arms sometimes?
Well, I think in general, very positively. You know, he's cute. I say that as his mother, but people like babies. And I think it's kind of humanized me to a lot of the politicians that I normally talk to in pretty high pressure situations. But it's also, you know, been a challenge. I had to sneak back to the back of the breakfast room and nurse him one day. I've had to kind of figure out how to transport breast milk and pumps and all of that stuff. So it was a little bit more logistically challenging than it would have been just coming here on my own.
And you've been talking to some regular folks too, including some people from parts of California that don't often have a major voice in the political arena. Places like the rural Eastern Coachella Valley.
That's right. I got to catch up with Olivia Rodriguez. She's 23. She grew up in Thermal, and her parents were farm workers. She and her twin actually are the first to go to college in her family, and she just graduated from UC Berkeley. And I asked her, you know, about what it was like being here, what it meant to her. Here's what she said.
For me, it was like mind-blowing. Like, I've never been in a space where there's so many people in different positions of like power, and kind of having the chance to talk to them about issues that are going on in my community, youth, immigration, education. I felt like for me, that was just really like a privilege to be there and have that access.
You know, she wants to take that home. She wants to really encourage more young people, especially in the rural part of California that she's from, to have that experience.
You also talked with California's oldest delegate, Roz Wyman.
Yeah, she was quite a trip. She's 85. This is her 16th convention. She started coming in 1952 when she was 22 years old. That was for Adlai Stevenson.
I was the youngest delegate. In those days, they didn't balance women and minorities and young people and the gay community being represented. I mean, we are much better today than we were back then.
And back then, you know, she was a rare woman delegate. We have a really diverse coalition here now, but she was kind of unique back then. She actually went on to chair the Democratic Convention in 1984 in San Francisco, where Geraldine Ferraro was nominated as the first female vice president. Roz's mom was actually her inspiration. She was a political activist in her own right, and she became political just after women won the right to vote.
My mother would be absolutely standing on a chair yelling, "We won, and look what we have done in America." On my tombstone, I wanted to say I was a great mom, and I helped Hillary Clinton get elected in the year 2016.
Back when Roz Wyman was first a delegate, you wouldn't have had transgender delegates at the convention.
That's right. And actually, there was about 28 this year from some counts I've seen when it comes to policies. You know, I've talked to a lot of politicians and delegates about how, you know, progressive California values have really seeped east towards the rest of the country when you talk about LGBT rights and those sorts of things that, you know, 10 years ago, California was an outlier about. And now we're hearing mention of them really at both conventions. I was able to catch up with 25-year-old Mia Satia. She's a Sanders delegate from San Francisco. As most Sanders delegates were, she's still a little disappointed about what happened. But when I asked her about the sort of historic nature of this, she did acknowledge that it was pretty special being here.
Growing up as someone who is perceived as a boy in a town of about 1,000 people, and I'm almost crying right now, but I didn't think that I would see our party rally behind LGBT rights, trans rights, and to see someone nominated as president who's a woman, even if I don't agree with her, I have to feel that history, and it's very powerful.
It sounds like you've had a pretty inspirational week meeting these folks. What are you going to do with all the pictures you have of California politicians holding your baby Diego?
I got to figure that out. I think we've been sending some home, but I think we're going to have a lot to go over with Dad and Grandpa when we actually arrive back in California.
All right, Marisa. Well, thanks so much for talking with us.
It was my pleasure, and it was a fun week.
For many Japanese Americans, Obon festivals are the highlight of summer. Obon is a Buddhist tradition, and it's kind of like Day of the Dead. People remember their ancestors, but also celebrate life with food, dance, and music like this. That's the San Jose Chidori Band. The group has been performing at Obon festivals around the state for more than six decades. Samantha Clark brings us a profile of the band whose musical history began in Japanese internment camps.
At a recent Obon festival in San Jose's Japantown, the Chidori band plays on a closed street in front of a Buddhist church. Colorful lanterns sway up above, and many in the crowd wear kimonos and enjoy teriyaki skewers. The band's director, Michael Yoshihara, leads the group of nearly two dozen musicians and singers. They play original as well as classic and contemporary Japanese songs, and they headline Obon festivals all summer long.
Traditionally, Obon is a celebration of your roots or those that have passed before you. It is a time to get back with your family roots.
And Yoshihara says the band helps connect people back to those roots. They travel all over the state from Lodi to Los Angeles. They're the kind of band that practically everyone and their grandmother knows if you're a Japanese American from California. Well, the Chidori band has had a lot of time to build up a loyal audience. The group formed in 1953. it was a difficult time for many Japanese Americans. They were reestablishing their lives back home after the federal government forced them into internment camps during World War II. Yoshihara explains it was in these camps where the Chidori Band and other bands like it took root.
There was entertainment that was done in the camps, you know, with groups of people. And then when they came out of the internment camps, then there was a desire to continue some of the bands. So a lot of bands formed in a lot of different communities.
Because when the war ended, many Japanese Americans were destitute and demoralized. Community leaders across the state saw music as a way to bring people together and preserve their culture. They asked people who had sung or played instruments in camp to form new bands.
And I sang in camp, and they approached us and said, "This is what you're thinking."
That's 89-year-old Masayo Arai from Cupertino. She's one of the Chidori band's original singers.
Because we're the only one left now. San Francisco, San Mateo, Sacramento, Fresno, they all had bands. And San Francisco had a very good band, but they didn't last.
It's a green label.
69-year-old Marsha Hashimoto grew up listening to the Chidori band. At her home in Watsonville, she digs through a cabinet to find some of their CDs. She pulls out two and pops one into an old CD player.
Brings back wonderful memories of my childhood.
She says her family would drive to the band's performances, which were usually packed.
And it was just wonderful to hear the quality of music. It just made you feel so happy. And that life was beginning to get back to normalcy. And these were the good times now.
But the music isn't just about nostalgia. At the festival in San Jose, 25-year-old band member Emily Kawaguchi says she wants to carry the group into the future.
Being a younger musician, I think there is a little bit of responsibility on the younger generation to continue and to be able to share that kind of or the traditional Japanese music with others.
And she's not the only one. A 17-year-old joined this year. The Chidori band hopes to bring in even more young people to keep the music alive. For the California Report, I'm Samantha Clark in San Jose.
You can catch the San Jose Chidori band at festivals this summer in Oakland, Union City, and Mountain View. Seems like every moment of our lives these days is captured and digitized, but so many sounds recorded throughout history have just been lost, from radio transmissions to symphony performances. Here in California, Stanford University has an archive dedicated entirely to saving sounds. In this episode of The World According to Sound, Chris Hoff and Sam Harnett play us a record from Stanford that preserves a peculiar piece of music history.
This is The Hour of Charm by the All-Girl Orchestra and Choir, featuring Evelyn and her magic violin.
The Hour of Charm Orchestra was popular in the 1930s and 40s, especially with the Army. The music was played for U.S. servicemen on bases around the world. The idea was that soldiers would find the music more charming because it was made entirely by women. Not just any woman could be in the orchestra. Band members had to be in their 20s, have long flowing hair, and weigh less than 120 pounds. They weren't allowed to marry, and they needed permission to date. These are just some of the rules women had to follow to play music for the Hour of Charm.
Thankful for the letting of the free. May we always true and faithful
World According to Sound is made by Chris Hoff and Sam Harnett.
To hear more episodes of The World According to Sound, head to californiareport.org. And while you're there, sign up for our podcast so you can listen to The California Report anytime, anywhere. For our next story, we're traveling halfway around the world. This is Amman, Jordan. It's on the front lines of the Syrian refugee crisis, and many of those migrants have been through extreme trauma. But there aren't nearly enough mental health professionals in Amman to treat them. So a group of Muslim Americans from California is stepping in to help. Reporter Lacey Jane Roberts traveled to Amman to catch up with them.
Sadia Hamid stands next to one of those big flip pads at the front of a hotel conference room. About 30 people listen to her presentation. The room buzzes with energy, and the discussion alternates between English and Arabic.
Yes, focus on positive. Uh-huh.
We're redirecting, and we're saying, oh, not okay. Instead of saying, not okay, you're not going to do that. I don't like that. No, because then he has your attention, right?
Yeah. Hamid's a school psychologist from Sunnyvale. She's leading a workshop on caring for children who've experienced trauma. It's part of a week-long training for Middle Eastern professionals who work with Syrian refugees. Not just doctors and psychologists, but social workers, volunteers, and educators. Watching the news about Syria from her California home spurred Hamid to look for ways to help by sharing her expertise in working with children.
It's really important for someone who does want to help to look within themselves to see what skills they have to offer.
The trip was put together by an organization called CPR, Care Program for Refugees. It's made up of mostly Bay Area-based mental health professionals, led by Dr. Saad Shaker.
Well, being a physician, I'm a humanitarian. So seeing all the devastation going on, it's like I want to have an impact in a positive way.
1.4 million Syrian refugees are living in Jordan, according to the government. Yet fewer than 100 psychiatrists live here. Dr. Shaker says Jordan would need more like 8,000 psychiatrists to adequately care for the stream of people. Since it's impossible to provide one-on-one care for everyone who needs it, the group had to come up with a different approach.
We decided the best way we can help is by training the individuals here who provide care for refugees.
The week was packed with trainings on a range of subjects, including PTSD, therapeutic interventions, ethics, and self-care for therapists. I head across town to meet one social worker who attended the trainings. I drive up and down the city's inclines, and when the gaps between the signature sand-colored buildings are big enough for a view, houses crown hills behind hills, as far as I can see. I head into a residential rehab center, where Nisreen Katbi cares for refugees who were injured in the war.
It's a critical situation when they came from a war zone, so I have to be qualified to deal with them.
Katbi says the training taught her how to better manage situations or behaviors that come up when she's dealing with patients.
Like if he is having constant nightmares or if he is aggressive in a certain way, what are the right thing to do or who to call?
The problem is vast, and more than a million refugees could potentially benefit from help in Jordan alone. Care Program for Refugees, the California-based group, hopes to expand their efforts by holding more trainings and offering webinars to reach more people. And Sadia Hamid says working with professionals like Katbi has inspired her to dig deeper into treating trauma.
One thing, of course, I feel is very motivated. I want to learn more about how to support children who've not only faced trauma, but war trauma and torture and grief and loss.
Hamid plans to return to Amman for next spring's training. But for now, she's going back to California with new energy and commitment to helping victims of war. For the California Report, I'm Lacey Jane Roberts in Amman, Jordan.
Every month, the California Report's Susie Rocho and our pop music critic Steve Hawkman bring you brand new songs with roots in the Golden State. This time around, they're here to tell us about some new releases, some of them out on old school formats with quirky musical family ties.
Hi, Steve.
Hello, Susie.
So today we've got a funny mix of family ties. We've got strong female voices. And just to be interesting, there's some not yet extinct music formats. Where do we even start?
Well, let's start with Ye Ming and the Rumors. I love
That's the Bay Area band Ye Ming and the Rumors from their new album, I Will Make You Mine. And it's the first of two releases that we're talking about today that are available on cassette. I think this is only available on cassette as a physical form and also digitally. But tell me about this release. What grabbed you?
I mean, I was just bouncing around in the studio here, hearing that song again.
Yeah, me too.
It's so much fun, so poppy, so peppy, and so sweet. And I'm listening to it at home when I first was checking this album out. And then there's a line in it that says something about gunshots ring out on the street. And I went, what? And I started paying more attention to this whole album. And you've got these sweet, sunny songs. And then there are like these shadows that appear. And there's just something deeper. Ye Ming Chen is, she was in a band called Dream Date before. And two of the other members of that band are in her new band, The Rumors.
So, Steve, if you had a chance to play this for somebody, where would you start?
Oh, I'd go with the title song, I Will Make You Mine. It's just, this is really the sweet, sunny 60s folk pop with those dark shadows. Why would you bring me home for one night stand? That wasn't my plan.
That's Ye Ming and the Rumors, and their new album is called I Will Make You Mine. Up next, LA band Venus and the Moon.
The moon and the tides, they sing all night, while the stars rest on the mountains. To the trees, I give my hand. Marry me to the song of the wind. Marry me, marry me.
That's Venus and the Moon from their EP Brother, Son, and that seems to be an appropriate title given the familial relations of one of the women who make up this duo.
Yes, well, Rain Phoenix, who, as many probably know, is an actress. She's also the sister of Joaquin Phoenix and was the sister of the late River Phoenix. This mini album is about the men in her life and her just and present. It's a whole tribute to that that male spirit that they've had along there, including those brothers. And you know, if you didn't know anything about Rain Phoenix and you heard just her name, Rain Phoenix, and was trying to guess what her music would sound like, don't you think it would sound kind of like that?
Totally. Sort of hippie.
And this even, I mean, we're talking about disappearing technology. This was recorded entirely on a four-track cassette thing that was given to Rain by River when Rain was just a teenager. It doesn't sound precious in that regard, in terms of we're going for nostalgia sound. It just sounds intimate in that way. It sounds close and personal.
Round, round, going.
That's Venus and the Moon from their EP, Brother Sun. And finally today, we've got a new single that's got really deep family ties and some LA punk pedigree. Don't talk to me. Those are the Side Eyes, and that's from a 7-inch single called Don't Talk to Me. And I don't even know where to start, Steve. There's like so there's so many, you know, like ties that bind here. I mean, you've got the Go-Go's, you've got Red Cross, you've got the Eyes. I mean, where do you start?
Well, first of all, I'm starting by, once again, I'm bouncing around in the studio.
Me
that
too.
Song. The Side Eyes, the singer, is 21-year-old Astrid McDonald. McDonald is her father's name. That's Jeff McDonald from Red Cross. But the song was written by her mom, Charlotte Caffey of the Go-Go's. And Charlotte wrote that in the late 70s when she was in a band called The Eyes before she started the Go-Go's. And not only does she do her mom's song on this, but the flip side is by Red Cross doing another song by Charlotte Caffey, another early from the very, very early years of the Go-Go's, one that hardly anybody ever hears, called Screaming. The single is collectively called Songs That Chargo Taught Us, and Chargo is the nickname for Charlotte Caffey.
So I guess the lesson today is don't throw out that turntable or that cassette deck, because there's still really good music being put out on both of those formats.
Absolutely. Let's keep dancing around the studio here. Let's just keep rocking.
Steve Hockman is the California Report's pop critic. He has more on the releases by The Side Eyes, Venus and the Moon, and Ye Ming and the Rumors at californiareport.org. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Susie.
And that's the California Report magazine, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Let us know what you think about our show on Facebook or calreport@kqed.org. Our director is Susie Racho. The technical producer is Seal Muller, with additional engineering from Howard Gelman. The senior editor is Victoria Maulion. David Marks is our web producer. Our interns are Lacey Jane Roberts and Eli Wertschafter. The California Report's editorial team includes Polly Stryker, Nina Thorson, Ingrid Becker, Ethan Lindsay, and Holly Kernan. I'm Sasha Coca. Thanks for listening. This is the California Report magazine.
Support for the California Report comes from the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children and youth at risk. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.